So, Micah.
Yes, Eric.
Do you know, and this is something that may exist even if you don't know, but do you think, have you ever received any inkling that the Tannenbaum family has a family crest?
Well, not to my knowledge, but if I did have to guess, I would say that it would be a Christmas tree.
Well, that's too easy. The reason I ask is because evidently my family, the Skull family, going back to the medieval ages, one of my ancestors, again, evidently was a knight, and I, for the first time earlier today, saw my family, like, heraldry coat of arms, my crest.
Wow. So this is Shaga's skull?
And Shaga's skull, it is very interesting, to say the least. It is an important moment, I think, for any young man. Dude, it's like six wolf heads. Let me show you this.
Now, are you just making this up in the interest of the show that it's actually six wolf heads, or is this legit?
Although that wouldn't be far from something that I would do on this show, let me assure you that this is 100% real. And the reason I know that it's 100% real is that the image I have just shared with you is tattooed on my uncle's left bicep.
So this is the part of the show where you learn about Eric's family members, possibly information that you could have lived without. Right, Eric?
Well, no, I do want to, if we can, I want to include this in the show notes because we've never really asked anything of the sort of our listeners before, but I kind of want to source like family crests and stuff now. I'm like, I got into it. Do you see the image?
Yes, I am taking a look right now. I'm awaiting the image to load here with much anticipation. That is pretty sick, to be honest with you. I like how it's a shield, right? And then there's on either side of the shield, which has a diagonal line going through it, are three heads. So as you said, six wolves in total.
Yeah, wolves or lions or something on fire. It's
did your
a
uncle
cool
not know?
Crest. So I've kind of got this ask a question, get a photo thing going with my uncle right now, but I assume he would know, seeing as how it is a permanent fixture now on his person. I didn't even know he had this thing, but evidently, yeah, so I have a crest now, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely is, and I'm sure the listeners will enjoy taking a look at it. As you said, we will definitely post a link in the show notes. And what a way to start off this Friday episode of Game of Owns. Eric learning a little bit about his family and the crest that represents it. And we're here, though, today not to delve into more comments and tweets and posts and other forms of communication as it relates to the first official trailer of season four. We'll, I'm sure, be continuing to talk about that as well as other trailers that surface and scenes that we get access to in the coming weeks. So we're actually, as was mentioned on Wednesday's episode, going to go back to our old ways a little bit. I know we've been jumping around quite a bit given things that have happened, and definitely season four trailer is something to celebrate. And
you know, Wednesday was a situation we got. I don't want to confuse any of the listeners because some of them were, in fact, very confused. You could call it more of a mini-sode that aired Wednesday. It was the second installment of the WGOO newsroom update. But those things really only happen when it is impossible for us to get together and record an episode, and rather than give you guys nothing, I decided to spin my creative loom a little bit on that, which is what resulted in that. And we don't plan on doing any more of those than we have to. But surprisingly, the feedback has been equal, you know, 50-50 on that. So I was actually pleased that there were that many likes. But really, though, we are here, and as previewed on the WGOO segment, we are going to be talking about
WGOO. What city is that based out of?
Winterfell.
Of course. I knew that was Winterfell. Coming.
That flying wolf or distant wolf as he was, whoever that guy is, always seems to know exactly what's going on beneath the chapters.
That wolf, quite honestly, looks like an Arcanine with Dragonite's wings.
Except Arcanine are red and fiery.
Yeah,
and
well,
they kind of look like zebras, and so no.
I'm stretching the imagination. One other thing I wanted to bring up before we got into the Arya chapter discussion here for A Clash of Kings is that the exhibition is returning to New York City. The
Game of Thrones bastard.
Exhibition that debuted in New York. Well, I don't think if that's probably not correct, actually. I don't know that it debuted in New York City, but it made a stop here in New York City just before season 3 last year, and it was here for a couple of weeks.
Are you going to visit it sober this time?
That is the plan, or is it? No, it will be in town here in New York from January the 27th through February 1st. And I believe the only way that you can actually sign up for this is if you are a Time Warner Cable subscriber. So it is in the Time Warner building, clear affiliation there with HBO. But for those of you who are subscribers to Time Warner here in the New York City metro area, definitely encourage you to go sign up and head on over to the exhibition. They have all the hours posted on the website. And hopefully there's a little bit of a preview. Maybe we can attend because I'm assuming that there will be some new props and other things that will be on display. In addition to, of course, the Iron Throne.
Yeah, and you know, updates like that are, you know, pretty important just to get out on over there in the airwaves, just in case there is anybody either in New York or within visiting distance.
And usually, not that we endorse this in any way, but you can, of course, be very creative in how you go about getting your tickets to something like this. If you have a friend, for example, who is a Game of Thrones fan or just a Time Warner Cable subscriber. I don't know how many tickets you can get at any one time or anything like that, but you know, there are certainly ways for people to work their way into the doors of this exhibition. So, you know, we look forward to hearing more about it. It was recent news, actually. I think was posted yesterday on the Game of Thrones Facebook page. So good to hear that that is coming back, and it'll help in the build-up, the anticipation of season 4.
Okay, let's talk about Arya.
Let's talk about Arya.
You know, let's talk about Arya. You know, this is her last chapter in A Clash of Kings.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because the pages are getting fewer and fewer as I continue to read through A Clash of Kings. And what I was going to say is that what's funny to me is that I am actually also in the process of doing a reread of A Storm of Swords as we get closer
you are.
to the season 4 debut. And I had not too long ago read an Arya chapter. So, of course, when I was talking to Eric before the show, he said to me, he told me what chapter we were reading, and then he described a little bit about what happened in the chapter that we're about to go through. And I said to myself, "So that's not the Arya chapter I remember reading." And so I have to remember that things are a little different, 300 pages into A Storm of Swords than where we are right now. In A Clash of Kings. But Arya is looking to escape Harrenhal, which at the beginning of the chapter doesn't really seem to be something that's on the top of her mind. But I think as it progresses and she feels less and less comfortable with the situation that she's in, she looks to hightail it out of Harrenhal.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at her situation now, she is known as Nan. And she is the cupbearer to Roose Bolton. Roose Bolton, who is not Tywin Lannister like she is his cupbearer in the show. So she's the cupbearer of Roose Bolton. And honestly, like, I find this to be a little, like, actually quite a lot interesting, because Bolton being a sworn bannerman of Stark, Arya is really in decent hands, compared to if she were found out by Tywin. So there's a moment in this chapter where Roose, much like Tywin, calls her out on her form of speaking, something she says, just the fact that she spoke to Roose, and she spoke out of turn and without being questioned, he questions it, but, you know, she doesn't reveal herself, but all the same, had she revealed herself. And this is why I kind of like to play the what if game, but really like on the show, that wasn't even an option because of course he is her enemy by blood. Tywin is. And then now you get this situation with the Bannerman. In the book, I was like, are they really going to change this up? Is she going to come out to him? Because he could protect her. He could put her back to where, in fact, I think Arya even mentions, River Run isn't far from Harrenhal. And really, had she come out to Roose Bolton, this is her last chance. You know, had she come out to Roose Bolton, do you think she could have been sent to be with her mother?
It's certainly possible. Part of the problem here is that you're dealing with a lot of shifty characters, and you're not entirely sure where loyalties ultimately lie. Because if you remember, there's that scene in the bedchamber when Bolton is being leeched, and all of these bannermen who are supposedly sworn to Robb and House Stark, they're pretty much at the point of saying that Robb should bend the knee. You know, Bolton makes it very clear in this chapter that he knows that Stannis has been defeated, that the Tyrells have joined with the Lannisters, and that Winterfell has fallen and Bran and Rickon are both dead, which is news to Arya.
News for Arya, right.
And so if you take all that into consideration, even though Robb has won every battle that he's had against the Lannisters, it seems like his men are becoming, at least, you know, that are within the same space as Bolton, you know, sort of under Bolton's command. They seem to be becoming a little bit jaded with Robb and not entirely confident in his ability to overtake the Lannisters. So that's why I say I'm not entirely sure that if Arya were to, as you say, you know, sort of reveal herself to Roose Bolton, that it would have resulted in her immediately being sent to her mother and her brother at River Run. And even then, you know, what are the consequences of her being sent there? Is she ultimately protected? You know, does she end up at the Red Wedding and become another casualty? In weird ways, I think things work out in her favor, if you could refer to it that way.
Because she would have been probably with Robb and all that. Yeah, okay.
And really, I didn't get this the first time I read through this chapter, which was at this point probably at least a year or two ago. I don't find Roose Bolton to be that trusting of an individual. There seems something that's very much off about him, and you know, you get a little bit of insight into his character where, you know, he has Arya responding to his wife who's writing to him pretty much every day, praying for his safe return. And you know, he even wants to go out and hunt, and not only hunt but hunt wolves. And that's a clear signal to me from the author.
My God, I didn't catch that. I did not catch that.
He's a little twisted, just like his bastard son.
He's hunting wolves. Oh my God. I didn't think about that at all. Here I am thinking, man, he turned the phrase down. He was like, no, I don't need to give in to the Lannisters.
I forget the overall number, but wasn't it 7 and 2 pups? Or
I thought it was what, like how many he comes back with?
Yeah, I forget. But
I was fairly certain it was 9 coats. I think
it was 9.
Okay. I think he returns with 9 coats, but there's still one out there. And before we get to that, we'll start at the beginning of the chapter here. You know, we did get a little ahead of ourselves, but Arya is kind of, as you say, she's going around Harrenhal, kind of just performing her duties. And she's approached by this crazy lady, or I guess it's a crazy lady. She is crazy, right?
I think you could probably argue that she's been driven crazy given her current state, but yeah, I think we can safely refer to her as a crazy lady, yes.
Okay. And it's just kind of a moment for – we don't know, and it's weird just because Arya is so little. You know, we have adult characters that we – well, not really. how many adult point of view characters do we have? I'm trying to defeat my own argument here, but no, there's Davos. There's people who can defend themselves, and then there's Arya. Well, Arya, obviously, as we figure out, can defend herself, but I'm still saying, like, these crazy people who walk up to Arya still have the power to hurt her. And really, just anybody in this whole world of George R. R. Martin who comes up to you and is in your face talking about whatever, even just rambling, has the power to hurt you. And this is, it's a threat. And mm-hmm. So we see even early on, she is kind of cornered by this lady, and you kind of worry about what she's going to do.
Yeah. It's a very toxic and dangerous situation for her to be in. And it's just proven, you know, by her encounters throughout the course of this chapter. She has really taken over in a position, not necessarily of power, but one that puts her very close to the top dog in Harrenhal, and that's Roose Bolton. And even those who are friends of her, or would appear to be friends of hers from, you know, the time that Tywin was there, Gendry and Hot Pie, have become somewhat afraid of her, have become, you know, a little bit edgy around her, because those that have sort of replaced the men, well, in fact, they're the same guys, but they're given a little bit more free rein. I mean, at least Tywin Lannister had a little bit of control over those that do the things that Vargo Hoat does, or Biter does, or Rorg does. You know, now they're just being given free rein, because again, the Boltons don't have the best history of being the most complacent and calm of individuals. So, you know, it's like a dysfunctional amusement park there, basically.
Wow, that's a great analogy, which I agree with. You know, she compares her living situation now in Harrenhal to how it was under Weese, and it's really only slightly better. You know, I think she's still living not even on a cot, you know, like on a rag somewhere.
Right. And I think it's the natural progression throughout this chapter that really starts to make her think that as she experiences more and more and speaks with Roose Bolton and others, that it's time for her to go. You know, she's really not safe here. There's two bannermen that she mentions that have gone off really to, you know, do the bidding of Roose Bolton, that were those that she would have possibly entrusted the truth with, that she is Arya Stark and could have perhaps confided in them further to get her to some kind of safety. But she knows that if the time comes where Roose is ready to leave and go back into battle or rejoin Robb, that Vargo Hoat is going to be taking over Harrenhal, and that's certainly not the most appealing of choices. And just think the free reign that some of the others would have. And remember, Jaqen and Hygar is no longer there to sort of protect her.
Right. And even if he were there, she's used her wishes. she's used her three.
She names. Has, but I always had the sense that he would protect her from the other two that were in the cage with her at that time.
Oh, so he feels indebted, like, but only because of the men he's with. Like, I think, what does he say when he's locked in there? A man cannot help the company he keep, or something like that. Like, he knows that they're a little, yeah, Biter and them are a little bit more dangerous. Well, you know, even though Jaqen isn't there, something he left behind with Arya comes in great use to her in this chapter, and I just have to say, it's kind of like the pause screen in Zelda. I don't know.
So now you're going to do Zelda references.
I'm going to do a Zelda reference. Go ahead. Everybody, let's listen to this. It's either pause or select. Mm-hmm. You can tell me. The N64 controller does not have a select button, does it? But no, it doesn't. You know, when you pause and you view your inventory, and it's like that. That's all. That was the extent of my Zelda reference, because Arya has this thing on her, this coin from Jaqen, and it's really like, you know, we know she has it. He gave it to her with specific instructions. But otherwise, I mean, basically when she pulls it out here, you almost expect to see an error message saying, nope, can't use that here. Because it's not yet time to summon a man from Braavos, and there is nobody from Braavos here that could take her to Jaqen for all she knows. So the fact that she does use it in this chapter and pull it out is really a bit of, you know, not breaking the rules, but it's really clever and it's really inventive. And Arya really is working with all of the tools that she has, to say the very least, in this chapter. And even though she won't reveal herself to Roose Bolton, she does ask him questions about what is to come. And when he says that the Bloody Mummers are taking over and that he's not taking her with him, she really has no choice. She decides to make a better life for herself.
Right. And at one point in the chapter, she almost throws it away, and she goes back and gets it later on. And so it's very smart of her that she decided to do that, because not only will that coin come in handy later on in the chapter, it will certainly come in handy later on in the series.
She doubts it's worth, she does consider throwing it away. But that's actually tied to my own of the chapter, which we're a little bit away from, so I won't get into that. But anyway, the cool thing is, now she's tried to get Gendry to move before. I forget exactly, it was a couple chapters ago, a couple Arya chapters ago, which they're spread out a little bit more because we just had Blackwater and all that stuff. So, you know, a long time ago, she asked Gendry to leave with her and he wouldn't. I think it was still under Weese's control because he's working as a blacksmith. Like, that's his duty. But, you know, now when she comes to him and explains the situation that the Bloody Mummers are taking over, she's able to convince him to come with her.
Yeah, she uses her bullshit story about what is going to befall all of the young people who are at Harrenhal, that basically Vargo Hoat is going to cut off all of their feet so that they're unable to leave. And, you know, again, she's using her intellect and her small power of persuasion to really motivate Gendry and to get him off his ass. And the bottom line is, I don't think this is something that Arya would do on her own. She needs these other two with her because, let's face it, they've been on the road together for a long time. You know, they came into Harrenhal together, and I don't think she wants to risk their lives there anymore. She knows that really any of them, you know, based on the circumstances and things that are going on, and that even we witness in this chapter, right, the heads in tar that are sitting above as the chapter opens, and these women that are basically being left in the middle of the bear pit to be had at any time, and not by the bear, by, you know, all the men of Harrenhal, you know, and you're dealing with a cannibal, you know, who's being told to sit at the end of the table because he stinks too much. And, you know, these are the kind of people that she's living around on a daily basis. And I don't think she wants to leave those that she considers to be her friends, her only friends and family, really, in this kind of a situation. And for her, the only option is to leave and to bring them with her.
You know, she doesn't feel that way at first until she hears a wolf howling in the background. Is she in the Godswood?
Yeah, and then she had that weird Ned sequence.
Ned speaks to Arya, and this is something I can't quite account for. It's a really cool thing that happens, though. I don't have the quote written down, but he basically reminds her that she is the blood of the wolf. We've heard of the blood of the dragon being significant, but the blood of the wolf. He says to her something along the lines of, "My daughter, you are."
You were hoping that in this time that I would be looking up the quote, and I did. So
yes,
it says, "When the snow falls and the white winds blow, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives." And she responded by saying, "But there is no pack." And she's saying this to the Weirwood tree. Bran and Rickon were dead. The Lannisters had Sansa. Jon had gone to the wall. "I'm not even me now. I'm Nan." And he replies by saying, "You are Arya of Winterfell, daughter of the North. You told me you could be strong. You have the wolf blood in you."
See, the "you told me you could be strong," that's like, that line in particular makes me think it's actually Ned. And not just a voice in Arya's head or her own subconscious trying to tell her, you know, trying to kick her ass into gear. This seems like it's a spirit of Ned talking through the tree, you know?
It's possible. I mean, we know that there's a lot of supernatural stuff that's going on now in this series. And We know that the Weirwood trees have always been somewhat magical because they're tied not only to the Starks and the old gods, but they're tied to the children of the forest, the Kokiri of Westeros. So,
and this is some straight up grade A Ben Kenobi shit that's happening. Except she doesn't see him at this point. It's just, it's the end of A New Hope where Luke only hears Ben's voice saying, "Use the Force." This is that kind of situation, but it encourages her, and she is let down. We didn't necessarily touch on that too much, that she does believe Bran and Rickon to be dead because she hears it in Bolton's chambers, and she is really let down that her, you know, pretty much her whole family's gone.
And then, you know, later on, you know, she's lying in her bed, and it's noted that she's listening to the voices of the living and the dead whisper and argue as she waited for the moon to rise. They were the only voices she trusted anymore. She could hear the sound of her own breath and the wolves as well, a great pack of them now. They are closer than the one I heard in the Godswood. So, yeah, you were right. She did hear one there. They're calling to me. So there's definitely this new element to Arya and her character. And, you know, she's becoming much more connected, I think, despite the fact that she cast Nymeria off very early on in the last book. There's even a mention of that, by the way, in this chapter, when it's said that Roose Bolton is sending some of his men to destroy. I'm trying to remember exactly what the name of the place was. Do you remember off the top of your head?
Or she had no desire to go there because it was the place where I think Micah was killed or Nymeria was. You know, I wanted to believe that it was, in fact, Nymeria that she heard while in the Godswood. That, you know, somewhere, somehow, her wolf still calls for her.
Right. I think that's, you know, a great point.
I mean, I hope. And then I don't know what this new pack is that she's hearing, but, you know, the voices of the living and the dead really could be all the Starks of Christmas past.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just, for a minute here, real quick, I wanted to talk about, you know, how the show did this so much differently and understand in the essence of time. They needed to do this. You know, clear difference, as you mentioned earlier, with having Tywin be there as opposed to Roose Bolton. But also the fact that in the book, Arya uses Jack and Hygar to allow Roose Bolton and his men to overtake Harrenhal. In the show, she uses him to escape. And to me, it's much more meaningful that she is the one that ends up killing this guard, who really, for all intents and purposes, is a bannerman to Rob.
So she betrays her own blood.
Right. But the fact that she's willing to take a life.
Well, that's really the biggest difference. And I mean, it's obviously, but still, it needs to be stated that, you know, if the first time Arya kills somebody in the show is after the Red Wedding, that's a full, you know, season or year or whatever you want to call it after this event in the books. Where right. she's even younger in the book than she is, and everybody is younger in the book. And so this is a very interesting moment. I mean, we're not even in Storm of Swords, the book right. where everybody kills everybody else. And Arya takes a life.
She does take a life at the end of Game of Thrones when she stabs the stable boy. But that wasn't as premeditated. That was more reactionary. I need to get out of here. This kid is going to turn me in. As opposed to this, which was very much thought through, and she even kind of says somewhat sarcastically back to Hot Pie at the end of the chapter, "Well, what did you think I was going to do? Of course I was going to kill him."
Oh, Hot Pie.
But those were kind of my thoughts on this chapter. It's very much a maturing type of chapter for Arya.
I did want to ask you, though, about what Elmar was talking about, kind of before Arya goes to the Godswood. She sees a letter come, or a raven come, and she's like, gee, wonder what they're finding out now. More of my brothers and sisters are dead? Yeah. But Elmar actually eventually, he was carrying a barrel earlier, and now he's just kind of around. And he says, quote, "We've been dishonored." He's talking about the phrase. "There was a bird from the twins. My lord father says I'll need to marry someone else." End quote. Now, do we know, is this the moment where, is it foreshadowing to the betrayal? Is it Rob's betrayal that they've just learned of?
Yeah, I believe so. And this is something, again, that just reading through the first time, probably we don't pick up on because it's so subtly included there. And so the Freys are now clearly aware of the fact that Rob has married somebody else and has dishonored his agreement with the Freys. And the fact that this kind of information is now public within Harrenhal, because let's face it, how old is Elmer? Chances are other people have read that message and other people are just generally aware of the fact, especially somebody like Bruce Bolton, I would suspect would be aware.
It's so much more difficult in the book because he's not a point of view character. And I don't think he's been married in front of, you know, Catelyn. I don't think there's any of that. We haven't seen him on the battlefield chilling with the nurse. Like, we don't know anything about this. And so it's impossible to know what the Freys are talking about necessarily. But it's all right here. I mean, the seeds of the Red Wedding are here.
Absolutely.
The Freys know that Rob hasn't kept his vow. And even though Roose Bolton didn't want to move against Rob necessarily right yet, or he didn't want to bend the knee like Stannis or Luz or anything, he's close enough because all, as you pointed out beginning of this episode, like, all of his men, the Freys were already doubting Rob and looking to turn on him. And now that
this just gives them ammunition to do that.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Not only that, though, but, you know, Roose Bolton can just be playing it off in front of everybody like, hey, yeah, man, I'm Rob's banner man. Like, but he could also be thinking, hey, you know what? These Freys are kind of making a whole hell of a lot of sense. Maybe I should reach out to Tywin Lannister and strike up a deal so my ass is safe at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know, and even those men that were talking to him, some of them had been held as captive by the Lannisters, and they said, I don't want to go through that again. So Tywin, obviously, not the best of hosts when you visit his home as a captive. But something else that I thought was really funny about this scene, and it's a great job by George, Elmar is talking about Arya.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I read that in a summary after the fact, but I didn't know, and I don't think we know that he knows that it was Arya.
He doesn't, but it's just funny that, you know, he's thinking that she's some kind of princess, and here's Arya, who's more of like a tomboy type character. And Arya's saying, oh, you're expecting this princess, so you're basically a dumbass. And you know, it's funny because these two were betrothed to each other.
Did Kat work that out?
That was part of the agreement that Arya
mentioned
would
Elmar
marry.
By name. And speaking of fun, it is time for owns of this chapter. Micah, you go first.
I have to give it to Arya. Here you go. Alone, she slid through the shadow of the Tower of Ghosts. She walked fast to keep ahead of her fear, and it felt as though Cirio Forel walked beside her, and Yoren, and Jack and Hygar, and Jon Snow. That's my own, because I think the fact that she would group those people together and act as if she had all of them at her side is pretty badass. Though, I will jump ahead about a page and say, I can also give her the own for simply whispering Valar Morghulis after she slit the guy's throat.
She's such a little psychopath. She really
She's
is.
She's got issues.
She's got her mantra. She's got habits and practices that are far above her. I don't know.
So what's your own? What's your own? Let's hear it. Who's it going to? Bruce Trolton? The leeches?
You know, comparably, Micah, my own actually makes a whole lot less sense and doesn't actually
oh,
work.
Really?
Did
you still have you seen Theon in the trailer yet?
Yes, I've seen Theon in the trailer. My own for this chapter goes to Abraham Lincoln, and I promise you, there's a perfectly good explanation. For
I can't
this.
Wait to hear this.
Okay, Abraham Lincoln, who's
vampire hunter?
No, not a vampire hunter. Whose likeness appears on a penny. When Arya is tossing around the idea of throwing the coin from Jack and Hagar away, she says it's worthless, and George R. R. Martin writes that it was about the size of a penny. Now, I guess it's one of those rare moments where he's either breaking the fourth wall because he's talking about pennies, which is a U.S.
Yeah,
currency.
That's a great point.
Or there's something called a penny in Westeros where it equals, you know, 1/100th of a unit of measurement. So just for the breaking of the fourth wall, potential breaking of the fourth wall, I certainly don't want to cause a ruckus. Anybody say, hey, shit, there are pennies in Westeros. But just the mention of a penny made me think of good old Honest Abe and how few men are as honest as he was in this world.
Well, that's a great own. I mean, it's interesting. It's different. And it's cool that you caught that because, as you said, it's in a way breaking the fourth wall because you're somehow bringing together what's happening in the present, even by mentioning a penny versus, you know, just staying within the world of Westeros and
right, you could using say raisin.
Some sort of currency yeah. that is relevant to the story that you're telling. Unless, in fact, there is a penny somewhere.
Possibly. He could have also said grape. He could have also said, what else is that size, really?
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, I mean, that's a fun fact.
Yeah, it's a fun fact. Look, even I think clearly, if I were in the business of giving owns to the point of view characters, Arya would totally get my own. But as we've established a long running history of this chapter, I do not give my owns to the point of view chapters because I think it is biased and, you know, rightly so. Some of these characters that we hear from inside their heads are pretty badass. Arya, of course, being one of them. So it was wonderful to hear from Arya, and I really like kind of where she's at the end of this book with Hot Pie and Gendry by her side yet again as they travel to another place they know not where.
Yes. So Arya is now heading off, as you say, to parts unknown with Gendry and Hot Pie. It's much like the end of the first book, if you think about it. You know, she's heading off to the wall, but she really doesn't know what lies ahead, and it's almost parallel with what's happening here. She's heading off, and we don't know where she's going or what's going to become of her. We know from season 3 some characters that she will meet, but we close the chapter on Arya for A Clash of Kings, and we turn it over to the Tweety Bird. That was better. Eric was great enough to go on over to twitter.com/GameOfOwns and see what
it's forward slash, Micah. It's always forward slash.
I say backslash. It sounds cooler.
It does sound cooler.
You would never say you wanted a forward slash something. You backslash sounds much, much better, in my opinion.
Well, I think if you were to put it, just for shits, if you were to put it in your URL as a backslash, I think it would automatically be changed because most browsers are smart enough to deal with that.
Yes.
Yes, as you mentioned, the Tweety Bird, twitter.com/GameOfOwns. We did receive 3 owns for the Arya chapter that we will now read to you here.
Can I just say thank you for those people who sent those in? Because I know we've been a little bit...
schizo.
Yeah, we've had a lot going on here the last couple of weeks. And the fact that you remembered to send in your owns for this chapter is really great. So I'm really looking forward to what these people had to say.
Well, wait no more. The first comment comes from Susan Stacy at Black Eyed Lily on Twitter, who says, Clash of Kings, chapter 64, Arya, the wolf howling in the wild owns this chapter by reminding Arya who she is.
Yeah, I like that own there from Susan, something that you talked about a little bit during
the discussion. It really gives her the oomph to get up and go. It's that get up and go moment. She almost thinks like she's not going to leave, and then she hears the distant wolf. But next own comes from Timothy Mulligan, who says Arya owns herself by telling, this is Elmar Frey, I hope your princess dies.
Yeah, that's one of those things you hope doesn't come back to bite her in the butt.
So that's kind of the joke then. That's George having too much fun with himself, isn't it? Because we talked about how actually she's the one that he was supposed to marry, but the reason it's funny is the entire reason it's funny is because she tries to get back at him when they're leaving by running off and saying, I hope your princess dies.
Right.
Okay, I see what you did there, George. Actually, no, I didn't. It was too above my head. But thank you to Micah and Timothy for pointing that out.
So I just want to go back to something that Susan said as well, because I think it actually it resonates with a lot of characters throughout the course of the series, at least up until the point where the books are right now. The fact that Arya is reminded of who she is, I think is an important theme in this series, because you do see it with several other characters. I'm not going to, you know, mention who, but, you know, we've seen glimpses of people forgetting a little bit of who they are throughout
Theon, the
TV series. Theon, yeah, would be one of them. There are others, some who change names in order to protect themselves from others. So we've seen Arya do that a lot, actually. And, you know, she questions in this chapter, that, you know, who am I? You know, she's...
Who am I?
Is she Ari? Is she, you know, Weasel? Is she Nan? You know, who is she? And, you know, the fact that the wolf would kind of reawaken in her this sense of who she is, I think is pretty cool. And I think it's applies to others throughout the course of the series. So I'll leave it at that. But that's a good point by Susan.
Well, and you know, that flows right into our third own and final own from Jen Wyman, who says, my own for Arya, quote, "I am a direwolf and done with wooden teeth," end quote. Love, strong, and determined Arya.
There you go. Now, I did see, though, even though we finished the owns for Arya, we did have some tweets here for one of the hosts.
Yes, this is for you, Micah.
You like how I did that?
Yeah, this is for Micah, and I'm not talking about the floor.
I haven't heard that before.
Oh, go ahead. For Micah. But yes, okay, so Victoria has a question for you, and all of our sullied listeners out there will get something out of this, and all of our unsullied listeners, like me, will not get anything out of it, but it does need to be addressed, because somebody was kind enough to send us this tweet. Victoria asks, do we think that LSH and CH are going to be in S4? Okay, I know what S4 is.
You got that abbreviation, yeah.
Trying not to spoil, but I need to know your opinion.
It's such a tough question to answer without, you know, giving away information that, you know, I've done I hope a pretty good job of not giving away. As far as LSH is concerned, I think that you know, a lot of people wanted to see that character in season 3. Oh. And I think that the more I thought about it, it just wouldn't have worked. It would have been not the right time. So I think if they do decide to bring this character into the fold in season 4, that they will do so at the appropriate time. I think it's important to the overall story, because I think this character is something that a lot of readers are looking forward to. And so it'll be interesting to see, though, how they develop getting to the point of revealing who LSH is. And I'll just leave it at that. CH, I think, will be in this season.
See, I promise. I mean, full disclosure, I have no idea who these guys are. But it doesn't mean that I've like been covering my ears, because I kind of like your thought. Here I am thinking that the reason that we would be asked is because these are like either minor characters or they don't have anything to do with the main story. So people are like, well, will they be pushed in or will they be pushed off? But I think that it's interesting to hear you say that, you know, LSH in particular is kind of a big character, but somebody who it takes some pains to introduce.
Yeah. And as it relates to the CH character, in order to advance a certain storyline, I think that it's important that that character be introduced. But I could also see them cutting that character out, because don't know that it's 100% necessary for that character to be the one who's responsible for advancing that storyline.
If that so makes kind sense. Of like, who is it? The guy who was with Whitebeard, right? Is not who's in the books, but not in.
No, I mean, I would say that this character is probably a little bit more important. And again, there's a lot of theories that surround that character and who that character really is.
Okay.
So, yeah. Again, it's very hard to talk in generalities here, and it sounds like I'm going in circles to people who haven't read, you know, where we are right now, or even through the first half of a Storm of Swords, because the CH character is not a character until much later in the series. So that would be somebody who would be brought in.
From the future.
From future books. Yeah.
We do apologize to our listeners for taking up 5 minutes of your time on
and
future
talking,
stuff.
And talking in initials.
Yes. But see, I think that that's kind of important because we may have listeners out there who also wanted to know what your opinion was, just like Victoria.
Here's my answer then, to condense it into 10 seconds or less. I think it would be great to have both. I would say, though, that there's a good chance, more than 10 seconds at this point, but there's, if I had a vote, I would say LSH, yes, CH, possibly.
See, why do I feel like Zach's just going to edit out all of that bullcrap and just put it in that short answer?
No, he should leave it in because that's the only time we can really have a discussion with the Sullied.
I think you handled yourself very well, Micah. You get my post-own. We're going to do post-own-owns now on the show for everybody who owns after giving their own.
All right.
We do want to run you through the different outlets and ways that you can communicate with us. We mentioned Twitter, which is twitter.com/gameofowns. Facebook, you can scroll upon our wall over at facebook.com/gameofowns. And you can email us at contact@gameofowns.com.
You can also go over to winneriscoming.net and leave comments on any post you want, but you know, we obviously like when you leave us feedback on the posts for our different shows throughout the course of the week. So we do read those comments on occasion, so please feel free to leave us your feedback there as well. One other thing you can do is head on over to iTunes. It is the month of January, so nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable for your rate and review over on iTunes. We do have a couple here, a few more since last week, and the first is from Asha_Elaine_67. Very creative names there. The first, Eric, you may be familiar with. The second one you will be shortly.
Elaine.
Asha says, cheers to the Sullied. I love listening to this podcast. I even find myself going back and re-listening, is that a word? I think it is, to old podcasts just to make my workday more enjoyable. I love how Micah and Selena react whenever a theory from Eric and Zach is on the right track. Congratulations for not giving away too much information, Micah and Selena. I don't know if I'd be able to do the same. Cheers to you. So thank you, Asha. Another one from Go Chiefs. She says, great show. Very big fan of this podcast. Helps me get through times when the show is filming. Go Chiefs. Sorry that your Chiefs lost in the first round of the playoffs, if indeed you are that kind of chief. One here from Nitz08 says, satisfies my fix. Like any Game of Thrones fan, I'm an addict. Hopefully you mean a Game of Thrones addict. And after finishing the fifth book, my withdrawal from Westeros left me emptied and unfulfilled. Game of Owns is just what the doctor prescribed. This podcast truly does a fantastic job of dissecting both the books and shows with intelligent and thoughtful discussions. Nothing less than a 5-star podcast. So thank you, Nitz. And finally, one here from Ravendor, who has the title Downton Abbey Crossover.
What?
Should be interesting. You are my long-lost friends. Of course. I was just talking about Ravendor the other day, weren't you? Remember that, Eric?
It's true. Were their ears ringing? Really?
Yeah, must have been. So they say, I'm still catching up with Game of Owns. Revisiting the books and listening to your commentary is pure pleasure. I love that Filch, Tonks, and Aberforth make appearances in HBO's Game of Thrones. But did you know that Ygritte, Rose Leslie, Sir Jorah, Ian Glenn, have prominent roles in PBS's Downton Abbey as Gwen Dawson and Sir Richard Carlyle?
Huh.
I did not know that.
I did not know that either.
We know that now, and what that means, I don't know, but we know it.
The more you know.
The more you know, yes.
Thank you.
Well, thank you to everybody who left reviews. Some great feedback. We always enjoy, you know, reading it on the show, and it is great for those who might be interested in something Game of Thrones related that is put through your ear holes.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to our Friday Aria episode. Next week we have, in order, Sansa, Theon, and Tyrion.
So Tyrion survived.
I guess so. Happy Friday!
So this is the part of the show where we are experiencing some technical difficulties. So while I wait for Eric to return, I'm going to continue drinking this Old Rasputin Russian Imperial Stout, which is very good, by the way. And this will probably get placed at the end of the episode, so you can thank me later for this additional bonus content.